blind, have low vision, or have another print disability which makes reading, holding a book, or turning a page difficult or impossible. The content is copyrighted by the respective publishers. For more information, please visit us on the web at nfradioreading.org.
Welcome to Around Our Area, a weekly look at community newspapers from around Western New York. Your reader for this hour is Patricia. Starting with the Amherst Bee from the front page. And this is the Amherst Bee for Thursday, November 27th. Holiday in the Village of Williamsville event returns by Joseph Clinard. To celebrate the holiday season officially being underway, the Holiday in the Village of Williamsville event is returning for yet another year on Saturday, December 6th. Since I first started getting involved, it has certainly grown and become an event that people really look forward to, said co-owner of Glen Park Tavern, Ellie Greenauer. It has definitely grown in attendance, and it gives the village a quaint feel. To kick off the event, Santa will be at the meeting room from 10 a.m. to noon, then at the train depot from noon to 2 p.m. for any pictures with children in attendance. Throughout the course of the event, a free holiday trolley bus will be available to take attendees up and down Main Street from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Between the Amherst Town Hall and Williamsville Branch Library and Main Street, over 30 vendors will come together for the holiday market, which runs from noon to 5 p.m. Included in those vendors is Glen Park Tavern, who will be selling its seasonal cocktail, the Tom and Jerry. Most times we just do cookie decorating, but we've gotten too busy and have no room for cookie decoration, said Greenauer. Tom and Jerry's are a big part of this event. We only serve it from Thanksgiving to mid-January, so a lot of people have started to come in and try to get them. Finally, the village will do a Christmas tree lighting ceremony at 6 p.m. that includes caroling in front of the village hall. The tree lighting is my favorite part of the whole thing, said Greenauer. Christmas is my favorite holiday. It's the launch of that holiday season, so I want to celebrate and come together with friends and family. And I feel like the tree lighting is the perfect culmination to such a great day celebrating that holiday cheer. With many activities, vendors, restaurants, and services, the Holiday in the Village of Williamsville event will have something for everyone to enjoy while the holiday season officially calls. I cannot wait to see how many people come to support local businesses and the event, said Greenauer. It warms my heart to see the children having such a fun time, and I certainly hope that continues into the year. In my opinion, it's the perfect way to start the holiday spirit. Continuing with the front page of the Amherst Bee for Thursday, November 27th, Amherst Symphony Orchestra performing Songs of the Season by Joseph Clinard. As the third performance of its 79th season, the Amherst Symphony Orchestra will be performing its Songs of the Season concert at 3 p.m. on Sunday, December 7th at Williamsville South High School. This concert includes several pieces of holiday-themed music to kick off the holiday season. Our first concert of the season during the summer was incredible, said Amherst Symphony Orchestra Association Board President Claudia Staines. This concert is something we do every year, and I cannot wait for people to enjoy it again this year. At 2:30 p.m., several members of the orchestra will bring some of their music students to perform selections of music in front of the audience before the concert. Several of our members are also music teachers, said Staines. You will see not just musicians, but proud teachers listening to their students perform for us. Included in this concert are pieces such as a Christmas movie medley, Kid Interactive, Jingle Bells, and a favorite of the orchestra, The 12 Gifts of Christmas. The 12 Gifts of Christmas will sound recognizable because of the 12 days of Christmas, but there are a lot of fun things that happen within the arrangement, said Staines. One second you'll be following along to a tune that you know, and all of a sudden the melody changes without warning, and that is what makes the piece so fun to perform in front of an audience. In addition to the selection of holiday tunes, this concert will also feature soprano singer Andrea Bickford. We are so excited to bring such a lovely voice to this performance, said Staines. She loves to have the opportunity to perform for people. She finds a great joy in the performance. She's delighted to be performing with us, and we are very excited to have her. With the featured soprano and variety of musical arrangements, this concert brings lightheartedness and cheer to the audience to usher in the holiday season. When you combine a community of friends and family and the joy that should be a part of this season with some wonderful music, you get a real sense of what the season should be about, said Staines. I hope that the audience can walk away with some tingles because they just heard something wonderful music, and I hope they leave with full tummies because we will be sharing cookies afterwards. Admission to the concert is free. However, a basket will be passed during the concert for any donations or contributions to the orchestra. We are all so excited for people to come enjoy the concert, she said. This season is the favorite time of year for many people, and we are trying to make that as fun and special as we possibly can with this concert. Continuing with the Amherst Bee under local news, Stony Brook Legendary Lights returns Thanksgiving night. As families throughout Amherst and Western New York digest their turkey and other treats on Thanksgiving night, nearby Lancaster will offer a festive start to the Christmas season as lights display return for Stony Brook Legendary Lights. Formerly known as Stony Brook Shines for Others, Stony Brook Legendary Lights will once again illuminate Lancaster Stony Brook / Quail Run development with its annual display of holiday lights and decorations. The neighborhood opens for visitors starting on Thanksgiving evening through the evening of January 1st, 2026. Stony Brook is known for its work with area-based, children-centric charities and causes, raising up to six-figure sums for other organizations in the past, like the Depew Lancaster Boys and Girls Club. During last year's event, the holiday organization raised $121,913 for the club's work with youth in the community. After the delivery of last year's check, Tony Dittmer, a Stony Brook committee member who spearheads organizing the annual event, said the main reward is providing a spectacle that can lift spirits. The Stony Brook / Quail Run development, accessible on both Pleasant View Drive and Walden Avenue, will include more than 300 participating homes, marking itself as a unique spectacle for all of Western New York. Each evening, visitors drive or walk through the neighborhood to view the lights and have the option to donate, if they wish, online or at any of the donation drop boxes set up throughout the neighborhood. Representatives from selected charity will be presented with the donation at the end of the holiday season. Stony Brook Legendary Lights is a registered 501c3 nonprofit organization. To learn more, visit the charitable group online at www.stonybrooklights.org. And turning to the Be Heard column in the Amherst Bee. The Concerned Citizens of Amherst is just a front for the Amherst Republican Committee that went down in flames election night, losing every office by 2,000 votes under the failed leadership of Bob Davis and Mike Crocker. This anonymous group that doesn't give any names of the leaders is just a joke and a shell game for the Amherst Republican Committee, which hasn't elected a Republican in years. And this year, they lost so badly that they did not come within hundreds of votes. They came within thousands of votes. We need totally new leadership in the Erie County Republican Committee and the Town of Amherst Republican Committee. They couldn't win a race if you paid them to. The next comment. My comment is regarding the renaming of the Amherst Main Library at Audubon. It would be my opinion that the name Mary F. Bobinski should be nominated for this honor. Mary was the acting director from 1973 to 2006. The Amherst Main Library was one of her major accomplishments. She personally sought New York State Senate approval for this new library and won their approval. She helped design and oversee the project, securing all the necessary funding. She also expanded the building years later to accommodate the ever-growing needs and usage of the community, making it the most successful library in the county. She planned a second expansion for its years later, and it was on the town's long-range plan because of her persistence. Sadly, she passed away before the second expansion happened. Libraries were her life's work. The Audubon Library remains the most successful in the system because of her passion for the library. Mary was laid to rest in the village of Williamsville, and a marble library book was her tombstone. She truly was the Amherst Main Library at Amherst's founder. Next comment. I'm calling regarding the Bee Herd that was sent in on November 20th in the Bee, and it's regarding someone who drove at a reckless rate of speed to go into the Amherst Police Department parking lot at a terrific rate of speed and parked and went to work in the department. It appears to me that there are two rules, one for the police and one for the rest of us. Next comment. The town of Amherst tells its residents to put their raked leaves on the grass between the sidewalk and the curb, not in the street. However, over and over again, only the leaves in the street are picked up, leaving the leaves on the grass. So now I put the leaves on the curb into the street so they will be picked up. Turning to the Clarence Bee for November 27th from the front page. Clarence Charity Event Brings Holiday Spirit by Olivia Francis Gray. A Christmas extravaganza charity event will help bring the holiday spirit to the Clarence community from 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. Saturday, December 6th at Clarence Presbyterian Church, 9675 Main Street. Children can take pictures with Santa and his sleigh, while adults can participate in a basket raffle and 50-50 raffle, which is a new addition to this event. All of the proceeds made from the raffles will be split between the Clarence Community Food Pantry and the Akron Newstead Food Pantry. Attendees are also asked to bring in canned goods, non-perishable items, hats, gloves, and scarves as donations to help families in need within the community. Along with the various activities, a lunch buffet provided by Rob's Topical Pizza, Cozy Catering, Clarence Deli, Morluski's Restaurant, and Carnivorous Food Truck will be available for attendees. It's a multi-function event. Not only do people have the opportunity to bring their families to take pictures with Santa, but people also have the opportunity to get something to eat and participate. The basket raffle, says Mark Jensen, one of the creators of this event. After realizing how much people are in need within the community, Jensen says that he shifted it from a Christmas party he had for Guise Lumber to a Christmas benefit as a way to get members to donate. Continuing with the Clarence Bee front page, Breakfast with Santa set for December 14th by Emily Vargo. A popular Christmas movie says that the elves have four food groups, candy, 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 candy corn, and candy canes and syrup. Of course, Santa loves his syrup too, and he and Mrs. Claus will get their fill this month at the annual Pancake Breakfast with Santa, hosted right here in Clarence by the Clarence Youth Bureau and Clarence Lions Club. The event will run from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. Sunday, December 14th in Town Park Clubhouse, 10405 Main Street, featuring plenty of festive activities alongside a breakfast of pancake, eggs donated by Crayers, sausage, home fries, juice, and coffee. The breakfast is just a really big hit, said Don Kinney, the Youth Bureau's executive director, who added that all of the food is made fresh, including home fries that the volunteers cut themselves. Santa will be available for photos as he and Mrs. Claus mingle with the kids, who can write their letters to him that day and mail them to the North Pole. Kids can also do a couple of crafts and play some games, while the whole family can enjoy listening to Christmas carols performed by local singing groups and participate in a basket raffle and 50-50 raffle. This is the fourth year that the Lions and Youth Bureau are collaborating on the Breakfast with Santa, and there will be at least 20 youth volunteers from the Youth Bureau helping out, along with the youth board members. It's been a great collaboration, said Kinney. The Lions Club used to do their pancake breakfast, but bringing Santa in and the games and crafts and the Youth Bureau aspect really pull in a lot of young families. The turnout has been larger and it has been successful for the Lions Club. This is their biggest fundraiser now. The cost is $15 per adult, $8 per child age 12 and younger, and free for kids younger than 5. Funds raised will go to various Lions charities and to the Clarence Community Foundation for its holiday gift project. Tickets are available in advance at www.clarencelions.org or can be bought at the door day of the event. Under local news for the Clarence Bee for November 27th, Samuel's Grand Manor proposes patio bar by Emily Vargo. Samuel's Grand Manor is looking to open a new outside dining patio, some of which could be enclosed during colder seasons to allow dining year-round. It's going to be an exciting restaurant, said owner Charles Pizzino. It's going to be something with garage doors for the summertime. It all opens up. This is something that we can use all year round. It'll make winter look better for people, and in summertime, you're outside. The patio would have about 130 seats, and the restaurant would serve both bar food and full meals. It is intended to be the sort of restaurant where people can show up in shorts, jeans, etc., and have a drink for work after work. If town approval is granted, Pizzino hopes to begin construction in April and intends to be finished about 3 months later. The proposed patio would require a temporary conditional permit and will go to the planning board for review. In other town board matters, Harris Hill Development received a special exemption use permit for a mixed-use project at 8450 Sheridan Drive. The proposal for the 14.8-acre property includes 85 residential units and 24,195 square feet of commercial space. The town board's organizational meeting will be on December 3rd. Councilman Peter DeConstanzo noted that committees always have openings and encouraged anyone interested to either visit the town website at erie.gov/clarence or to contact the supervisor's office about opportunities to get involved. Eurocharge New York will go to the planning board for review of a proposed automotive repair and performance facility at 5844 Goodrich Road. Supervisor Patrick Casilio recused himself on the matter due to his connections to the site. Councilman Dan Minchnick encouraged the community to remember the Clarence Community Pantry during both before and after the holidays. Don't forget about these people. It's not just about Thanksgiving. It's something that we should push all year long, he said. Robert Bagley's request to build a secondary living unit at 9329 Via Clamato Drive, attached to an existing home, will be subject to a public hearing during the January 21st town board meeting. The proposed 900-square-foot addition would house an aging in-law. Continuing with local news from the Clarence Bee, Deck the Stalls set for December 13th. Spruce Metal Farm will hold a festive Deck the Stalls event from noon to 2 p.m. Saturday, December 13th at the farm, 10333 Keller Road. This family-friendly event is open to the public and includes hot chocolate, coffee, cookies, voting on the best decorated stall, a scavenger hunt quiz for kids to win a free riding lesson, a 50-50 raffle, the opportunity to ride and take photographs with Ruby the red-nosed reindeer, and a chance to meet the rescue horses of Phoenix Rising Equine Rescue and Rehabilitation. For more information, email sprucemetal@gmail.com or call 716-741-2346. The Clarence Rotary Club Foundation is selling fresh 14-inch Christmas wreaths as a fundraiser for the care and maintenance of the Clarence Veterans Memorial. Wreaths cost $55 each or $100 for two and are made of mixed greens, ribbons, and pine cones. Visit clarenceveteransmemorial.org/wreath to place an order. Wreaths can either be donated for placement at the Veterans Memorial or be picked up from 10 a.m. to noon Saturday, November 29th at Town Park Clubhouse, 10405 Main Street. You are listening to Around Our Area on the Niagara Frontier Radio Reading Service. The time is 2:20. Turning to the Cheektowaga Bee for Thursday, November 27th, from the front page. Deadly incident occurs in Cheektowaga. Police arrest suspect. The Cheektowaga Police Department is currently investigating a serious incident that started on Hedwig Avenue near the corner of Walden Avenue and ended on Walden Avenue close to Alexander Avenue at 3:45 p.m. Sunday, November 23rd. People calling the department's emergency dispatch center claimed that a woman was struck by a motor vehicle and a male who was operating the vehicle fired several shots using a handgun. Alexis Navaroli, 32, was found deceased and lying on the roadway by a Walden Avenue near Alexander Avenue. The vehicle that is alleged to have struck her was found inoperable at the location. The male suspect allegedly carjacked another victim at gunpoint nearby and fled the area. Buffalo police located the stolen car driving inside the city of Buffalo, and a brief car chase concluded near Jefferson Avenue and Best in the city of Buffalo. Gary Green Jr., 37, was detained, and a handgun was recovered and placed into evidence. After consulting with partners at the Erie County District Attorney's Office, Green was charged with murder in the second degree and robbery in the first degree. He was arraigned in Cheektowaga Town Court and remanded to the Erie County Holding Center. Green was held without bail. The defendant is accused of intentionally causing the death of the victim. If convicted of the highest charge, Green faces a maximum sentence of 25 years to life in prison. District Attorney Michael Keene commended the Cheektowaga Police Department and the Buffalo Police Department for their work in this ongoing investigation, and additional charges may be filed. Anyone with information is encouraged to contact the Cheektowaga Police Department at 716-686-7457. The case is being prosecuted by Assistant District Attorney John Gergen Jr. of the Homicide Bureau. As are all persons accused of a crime, the defendant is presumed innocent until proven guilty in a court of law. Continuing with the front page of the Cheektowaga Bee for November 27th, St. Aloysius to hold 82nd Christmas Fair by Rachel Ross. On Saturday, December 6th, the St. Aloysius Gonzaga Church on Cleveland Drive will be hosting their 82nd annual Christmas Fair, continuing a holiday tradition that has remained a cherished part of the parish community for decades. Running from noon to 5 p.m., the event features a variety of holiday activities and treats for participants of all ages. The main highlight of the fair is their collection of game booths where participants can compete to win prizes. In addition, the event offers themed basket raffles, an indoor flea market, a bake sale, a full kitchen, and a visit from Santa Claus. The event is free to attend, with proceeds from activities going towards parish expenses. Booths and other activities are run by church parishioners. According to church spokesperson for the event, Mary Missard, the affair was originally started in 1943 by St. Aloysius' first pastor, Reverend Walter Gaunter. The fair has always been a big part of the great history of St. Aloysius' parish, Missard said. Throughout the years, many of the fair's original attractions have remained the same, including a collection of the booths and the food menu. In 1943, we started out with a variety of different booths filled with prizes, and each booth had a particular theme. So there would be a radio booth or a candy booth or a doll booth, Missard said. Some of the booths are actually the same booths. There's still a variety booth. There's still a toy booth. There's a children's fish pond. So some of them carried on the tradition. Along with maintaining some components, the fair has also added new activities throughout the years, including the themed basket raffles. Regardless of new or old traditions, Missert said the fair has always served as an opportunity to bring the community together. Our former pastor, Father Peter, he used to say all the time that the Christmas fair was like one big family reunion, because it brought together the current parishioners, former parishioners of St. Al's, and there was even alumni that would come from out of state every year, Missert said. The fair has created lasting memories for many of the church's parishioners, spanning back to its inception. Some of our current parishioners remember attending the fair when they were kids in the 1940s, Missert said. In fact, there was one person who said when she was 4 years old, she remembers our first pastor, Father Walter, as Santa Claus. Missert said that still today, the fair remains a big success for the church. We've never actually kept count, but I know we have a huge parking lot and it's always completely filled, Missert said. More information about the event can be found on St. Aloysius' Facebook page. Returning to the front page of the Cheektowaga Bee for November 27th, Score to Hove Seminar for New and Emerging Business Owners by Rachel Ross. On December 6th, business consulting group Score, Western New York, will be hosting a seminar at the Julia Boyer Reinstein Library on Lawson Road, aimed at helping new and emerging business owners. According to SCORE mentor Ted Galantowicz, the day-long seminar will provide a comprehensive overview of how to establish, grow, and maintain a business with advice and recommendations from industry professionals. The workshop is open to both brand new entrepreneurs and existing business owners whose ventures are still young and upcoming. Galantowicz said that the seminar will be broken down into 7 segments covering the basics of setting up a business. This would include everything from marketing your business, legal organization of your business, and funding of your business, Galantowicz said. We also get into insurance and strategic planning for your business, how to write a business plan. Those are the major components. Each segment is presented by a field professional in an effort to provide as thorough an overview as possible. We have a CPA that comes in and talks about the importance of financial statements and numbers in your business. For legal organization, we always have a lawyer that comes in and talks about how to form your LLC or your corporation, Galantowicz said. It's an overview, but it's an intensive full day of business type subjects. According to the library's director, Daniel Caulfield, the seminar also serves to connect participants with mentors that they can consult and seek guidance from in the long term. When you come into SCORE, somebody will start working with you and it's completely free, Caulfield said. The workshop does cost money because of the out front of the flash drive, the booklets they give you, the papers, but it all balances. Really good information comes from the one-on-ones with the mentor. Caulfield also will be speaking during the seminar, providing participants with information about how and where to access free additional resources pertaining to business management. I'll talk to them about free resources and how to find them online, Caulfield said. There's always somebody ready to sell that information to them, and if they can do it themselves, that helps break that barrier of cost. Caulfield said that in addition to partnering with SCORE, the library hosts workforce development programs that will help participants with skills such as making a resume or connecting with employers. When you want to work for yourself, then you're the entrepreneur and the business owner. This is the next step in business development, and that's what we try to do also, Caulfield said. Participants can register for the workshop via SCORE's website or a link in the event bio on Facebook for a fee of $75. Discounts are available for early registration and select groups such as students and veterans. Additional information about SCORE and their services can be found at SCORE, that's S-C-O-R-E, .org. You're listening to Around Our Area on the Niagara Frontier Radio Reading Service. The time is 2:30. Turning to the Lancaster Bee for Thursday, November 27th, from the front page. Lily Bell Mee's closing taproom doors to focus on brand expansion. Owners express gratitude to community for years of success, by James Sinner. After over 8 years of success in the village's downtown, Lancaster's Lily Bell Mee's is closing its doors on West Main Street and giving owners Patricia and Joe Marshall the opportunity to focus on the brand as opposed to the operations of running an establishment. The pair have opted to expand their already existing partnership with West Seneca's Rusty Nickel Brewing Company, where their product will be housed, bottled, and sold, freeing up time to focus on the distribution and marketing of their meads. It's a lot of work to get the product packaged by taking it from here, putting it in a truck, taking it to West Seneca, and canning it over there, Patricia said. There's no room to put a canning line in here. It's cost prohibitive. She added that the decision derives from the shifting priorities that come with getting older. We are at the stage in our lives where we just want to pivot a little bit and take on more quality life of life kinds of things. Joe said the journey from where Lily Bell Mee's and West Main Street started when they first opened to today was a special thing to witness. We just took a risk. We didn't think the street was opening right away. He said, I still remember when the street first reopened and things all went through again. It was like opening the business for the second time. Joe and Patricia noted that the future of the Renaissance Street Fair they launched in 2022, which was handed over to the Lancaster Village Merchant Association in 2024, will remain a part of the village's events. The fair quickly gained popularity when it started, drawing attendees from around the county and Western New York region. It was amazing how well the community came out in support of the event. We just started it and thought that we'll see how it goes, Patricia said. It was really nice to see how much foot traffic it created and how much buzz it created, how much energy was created. That was really fun. Joe and Patricia feel that not only is the time right to make a change, but that the partner they will be making that change with, Rusty Nickel Brewing Company, shares their commitment to creativity and quality, making them the ideal business for a partnership. I think one of the big reasons we are excited to move to West Seneca is because Rusty Nickel is proactive. They are leading the charge, she said. They are a wonderful group of like-minded professionals that keep pushing themselves, escalating, making improvements, and pushing quality over and over again. We totally believe in their product, and they totally believe in ours, Joe said. It's great when you're with people that just get it. Joe and Patricia wanted to quell baseless rumors circulating online that the business is closing due to increasing costs of leasing the property. There's been talk that we were pushed out of here. Absolutely not, Joe said. We had 2 5-year extensions built into our lease. Overall, the couple is excited to start pushing distribution of their brand in addition to providing education on the styles of meads available. There's as many meaderies in the United States as there are breweries in New York State. It's about 500. It needs to spread out, Joe said. We can ship to 40 or 50 states. We can find those people. We can market our mead to those people. There's a lot of education still that's needed with mead, and that's where our passion really lies, Patricia said. Whalen Brewing Company, with existing locations in Orchard Park and Ellicottville, has announced that they will be moving into the Lily Bell Mee's location. Ownership consists of experienced restaurateurs with ties to other establishments like West Rose Restaurant in Ellicottville and Buffalo Burger Brothers. Lily Bell Mead's final day of operation is Saturday, December 20th. Learn more about their final run of events and activities online at www.lilybellmeads.com. Continuing with the Lancaster Depew Bee for November 27th, under local news, Boys and Girls Club officials expressed frustration at recent town board meeting by James Sinner. The Depew Lancaster Boys and Girls Club continues to hit rocky terrain in their quest to reestablish steady funding from the town board. Executive director of the club, Jeff Kupka, was confounded by the board's recent decision to table the already diminished donation amount down from $245,000 delivered in the years past. Currently, according to documentation from the town clerk's office, the club is scheduled for a $150,000 donation from the town for 2026 once a resolution is passed. "Haven't we been giving you everything you want from day one?" Kupka asked during the most recent town board meeting on November 17th. "Just because it says on some Facebook posts that the club isn't complying with everything doesn't mean it's true." Kupka went on to say that the club received a letter alleging noncompliance. He took issue with the language used and requested an example of what is out of compliance, if an audit hasn't occurred yet. "In one of the letters, it says that we are not keeping the funds in a separate account and paying out of the account," Kupka said. "We've talked about all of that. We can't do that. You are not paying for all of our payroll. You are not paying for me. You are not paying for my cleaner. You are not paying for my other site." He added that the use of paychecks for his payroll creates regulatory complications on how many transactions can be made, stopping the use of a second account for only town expenditures in the way the board requires. "We have invoices. We have payroll. You have all seen this stuff," Kupka said. Kupka believes that the motivations for the donation reductions and incoming audit arose from a place that had nothing to do with financial housekeeping. "I agree that this became political, but it certainly didn't come from Jeff Kupka, the executive director, or my organization. I believe this political stuff started way, way back." Supervisor Bob Leary addressed Kupka's concerns, echoing prior sentiments of staying in compliance with the state comptroller's office following a negative audit report during a previous supervisor's term. "Yeah, we are going to wait until the audit is done to make sure that everything is in compliance, and then the board can determine how much money they want to give moving forward," Leary said. When asked by Kupka who exactly was making the determination of compliance, Leary said that the decision is his as the chief financial officer for the town. "We needed more information." Kupka asked why Leary's perception of the club's financial reporting and his financial director's opinion, Nick Swanson, were different. "Nick works for me," Leary said, "for an accountant. Money going in and money going out is sometimes sufficient, but we have higher standards than that because we have to show where that money is going to be in compliance with the state comptroller's determination as to what we have to do." Kupka reiterated that saying an organization is out of compliance without there actually being an audit to determine that status, even if funding was held until its conclusion, continues to needlessly tarnish the club's reputation. "You said you have to determine I'm out of compliance, but it, the letter, says I'm out of compliance," Kupka said. "We will leave it to the auditors to make a determination," Leary responded. Kupka concluded, "It's still in a letter, though. It still makes me look bad when that letter is out there. The trigger words are tough." Adam Stoats, president of the board at the Boys and Girls Club, expressed frustration with the path to approve new funding before the audit, leaving them uncertain how to prepare for expenses in the coming year. "We provided receipts for all of the transactions and where your money is going, but when you're auditing things, you're looking backwards on how the money is spent. When you're talking about needs, that's looking forward. So I don't understand what the audit is answering for you, Stoats said. He added that even with a current reduced amount on the table, the search for a full reestablishment of $245,000 was a goal for the club, leaving the inability to secure an even lesser amount disheartening. Even with this resolution, we will have a gap we would have to cover based on the budget that we all walked through together, Stoats said. Without that, there's insurmountable budget challenges to keep the program running in the way we agreed to in that agreement. Stoats also questioned the legitimacy of the compliance issue, suggesting the Boys and Girls Club's funding issue is linked to local politics surrounding the topic of a supervisor who both worked at the club and for the town well over a decade ago. Leary insisted the decision was related to keeping the town prepared for a state audit and as a way to evaluate funding needs at the club for the future. It is a compliance question as to where the money was spent, correct, but it's also going to, based on that, help make determinations to move forward as to if you get more or less money, Leary said. But we have an agreement for 3 years. That won't change unless there's a reason to change it. But at this point in time, I don't see a reason to change it. It will give a sounding board as to how much money is needed for the program. Stoats, like Kupka, reiterated that he welcomed the incoming audit by Drescher Malecki, but was disappointed by what he felt was a complicated process lacking transparency from its start in the last budget until now. When you see the funds you are giving us being spent on that program and we have walked through the budget and see that gap, we expect to see that resolution come back on the table and be voted on, Stoats said, or adjustment because you're going to see an additional gap. Maybe we will put more money on that resolution to solve the gap. Absolutely. We'll take a look at it and see what it is, Leary responded. But we also answer to the state of New York for a lot of this stuff, so we have to comply with them. They are probably going to audit us, so we have to make sure everything is in order. I think this has nothing to do with the state of New York, but I will leave it at that, Stoats responded. Leary stated that putting it back into the hands of the auditors is the fairest thing you could possibly do. We end the politics and we go from there. You are listening to Around Our Area on the Niagara Frontier Radio Reading Service. The time is 2:40. Continuing with the Lancaster Depew Bee under local news. Erie County's Equal Employment Opportunity Division warns of scam. The Erie County Division of Equal Employment Opportunity is alerting minority and women-owned business enterprises to a phishing email scam that falsely claims to come from Erie County and urges recipients to click a link to recertify their business. The email did not originate from the Division of Equal Employment Opportunity and could expose sensitive business information if the link is opened. The division was notified within the last week after a local business owner received the suspicious email and contacted the office instead of clicking the link. The message instructed the recipient to recertify with Erie County and included a hyperlink that, if opened, could compromise the company's information. Scams like this rely on the recipients not looking closely at details such as who is sending the email, obvious typos, odd symbols in the subject line, or other red flags, said Andrew McLaren, director of the Erie County Division of Equal Employment Opportunity. If an email looks even a little suspicious, do not click on any links and contact our office to verify its legitimacy. The Division of Equal Employment Opportunity will be contacting all certified MWBE business owners to confirm that the phishing email did not come from Erie County. Any legitimate recertification correspondence from Erie County will come directly from the Division of Equal Employment Opportunity using its official contact information. Business owners are urged to remain vigilant about potential scams and to carefully review sender addresses, subject lines, and links before taking any action. Anyone with questions or who have received suspicious emails are encouraged to contact the Erie County Division of Equal Employment Opportunity for assistance. Continuing with the Lancaster DePew Bee, under local news, county celebrates first Paramedic Academy graduating class. The Erie County Department of Health, ECDOH, announced that 16 students have completed the inaugural Paramedic Academy course. The program consisted of a rigorous 10-month program that recently earned its letter of review accreditation from the state. These graduates are now eligible to take the New York State Paramedic Certification Exam and the National Registry Paramedic Certification Exam, qualifying them to serve as paramedics in paid or volunteer roles throughout the region. Erie County launched the Paramedic Academy in late 2024 to expand the number of certified paramedics available to work and volunteer with local ambulance services, including the Erie County Ambulance Service. Just as our county's ambulance service strengthens the network of available transportation, our Paramedic Academy is building a pipeline of qualified, certified, and motivated professionals to the regional workforce, said Erie County Executive Mark C. Pollenkarth. These initiatives are making our local pre-hospital transport and medical care in the field more efficient, more effective, and ultimately improving health outcomes for accidents, injuries, and sudden illnesses. The Paramedic Academy curriculum included 500 hours of classroom and laboratory instruction and 425 hours of hands-on clinical training in hospitals and healthcare settings. Two new Paramedic Academy classes are scheduled for 2026. One daytime session and one evening session to increase training availability. Both classes will begin in January with a combined total of 28 students. USPS Operation Santa accepting letter adoptions. The United States Postal Service opened letter adoption for its annual Operation Santa program on November 17th, inviting generous individuals and groups to fulfill the holiday wishes of children and families across the country. More information, including full program guidelines and how to participate by writing or adopting a letter, is available at USPS Operation Santa, that's all one word, .com, USPSOperationSanta.com. Lancaster Pets invited to Santa photo shoot at Fatty Beer Company. Lancaster Unleashed Incorporated, the nonprofit that supports Como Lake Bark Park, will host its annual pet photos with Santa on Saturday, December 6th at Fatty Beer Company, 1 West Main Street, Santa Claus. And his helpers will be available for photos with pets from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Noted local photographer Troy Durans will volunteer his time and talent to provide downloadable digital photos to all participants. A minimum $5 donation per photo is requested, with all proceeds benefiting the City of Buffalo Animal Shelter. Please note that there is a maximum of 2 dogs or people per photo. The 2026 Lancaster Unleashed calendars will also be available for $15 each. Participants can also have their pets, past or present, included on the annual Holiday Fence of Fame. Each pet's photo will be turned into a holiday ornament decoration and displayed on the Bark Park fence from December through the New Year. The cost is $5 per ornament, and ornaments can be retrieved after the display. To participate, send your pet's photo, name, and your contact information to lancasterunleashedpictures@gmail.com. Participants will then send $5 via Venmo at Lancaster Unleashed. Organizers will take walk-in photos during the event on December 6th. For more information, contact Mary C. St. Mary, president of Lancaster Unleased at 716-391-0999. Lancaster Unleased is a registered nonprofit in partnership with the Erie County Department of Parks, Recreations, and Forestry and sponsors the off-leash Como Lake Bark Park. You are listening to Around Our Area on the Niagara Frontier Radio Reading Service. Turning to the Kentown Bee for November 27th from the front page. Village Board renews Stop DWI program by Rachel Ross. During the Village Board of Trustees meeting at the beginning of the month, board members approved an agreement to renew Erie County's Stop DWI program in Kenmore, an initiative that provides resources and tools to counties across the state in an effort to prevent accidents caused by impaired drivers. According to Village Police Chief Thomas Phillips, the program falls under the umbrella of the Erie County Central Police Services, which provides technical and forensic support to departments across the county, including Kenmore. Erie County Stop DWI provides funding, training, and resources to local police departments throughout Erie County to support enforcement efforts with the goal of reducing alcohol and drug-related accidents, Phillips said. According to their website, Stop DWI utilizes a general deterrence model in order to discourage drivers from operating a vehicle while impaired. The components of this model include prevention and education, incapacitation or stopping drinkers from driving, reform or treating individuals to prevent future offenses, and deterrence. According to Phillips, application can vary from county to county and can be affected by factors such as the time of year or size of the initiative. Throughout the county, they'll do separate enforcement events, Phillips said. They could be road checks, and those could involve multiple agencies all participating, and that would be maybe during the holiday season or a night where traditionally you would expect an increase in alcohol-related impaired driving. The night before Thanksgiving, for example, things like that. Phillips said that Kenmore mainly employs roving patrols in their deterrence efforts. We designate traffic enforcement patrols targeting impaired driving, Phillips said. According to their website, Stop DWI is the nation's first and only self-sustaining impaired driving program, as funding is collected from fines paid by convicted impaired drivers, as opposed to tax dollars. Phillips said that his department receives reimbursements from Stop DWI for the cost of their resources. Stop DWI was created by the New York State Legislature in 1981. The organization credits the late Senator William T. Smith as a major influence in creating firmer driving impairment laws in the state following the death of his daughter in 1973 at the hands of a drunk driver. According to their website, the organization contributed to landmark rulings such as the open container law and mandatory seatbelt law. The organization offers a collection of free resources through their website, including videos and publications to be utilized for educational and training purposes for schools, agencies, and community groups. Stop DWI also offers a victim impact panel where those who have been personally affected by a drunk driver or have information pertaining to an incident can share their stories. The next Erie County panel will take place on December 10th at the West Seneca Town Court on Union Road. Prior registration is required. More information about the organization can be found at their website, stopdwi.org. Continuing with the Kentown Bee for November 27th, New York State Assemblyman Bill Conrad announces $250,000 grant for City of Tonawanda by Joseph Clinard. New York State Assemblyman Bill Conrad announced that he secured $250,000 in state funding for the City of Tonawanda during a special conference at the Tonawanda Fire Department. This funding covered several projects across the City of Tonawanda, with the bulk of the funding going towards equipment and building upgrades for the fire department. It is always my privilege to offer support to firefighters, said Conrad. This is not only a worthy investment in the well-being and safeness of our families, our neighbors, and our properties, but I also hope it will allow the public to show gratitude for the service that the firefighters so selflessly provide. For the fire department, the funding addresses several issues with new upgrades, none bigger than 30 brand new Motorola APX 6000 portable radios that can withstand drop impact, high temperatures, and water and hazmat exposure for the most ease of communication for the firefighters. You cannot stress enough how important communications are while we are on the scene of incidents, said Tonawanda Fire Department Chief Joseph Briggs. Too often we have had communication issues caused by operating in a large building or weather issues where we're putting out a fire and the microphones get impaired. These are things that we wanted to address because they put the general public and our firefighters at risk, and this has been something we have been striving for several years. On top of new radios, the funding will also provide renovations to the bunk room and shower area of the headquarters to be more accommodating to female firefighters. Instead of an open sleeping area, there will be locked privacy pods, and now the showers and entrances to them are separated by gender. Additionally, the funding provided enhancements to two of the city's volunteer fire company kitchens, including new and repaired stoves and repainting. The remaining funds from the grant are going towards the construction of a flagpole monument with solar lights located at the Ronald J. Palazzi Pavilion in Nyawanda Park. The City of Tonawanda and I say thank you to Assemblyman Conrad for his insightful and determination in assisting emergency services and the men and women of our fire department, said City of Tonawanda Mayor John White in a press release. We also thank him for working across the aisle and meeting the needs of smaller communities. And continuing with the Kenton Bee for November 27th, town hosts free holiday event on December 6th. The Town of Tonawanda Youth Parks and Recreation Department and the Town of Tonawanda Police Department are teaming up with Western New York Homes for the Holidays Incorporated to present a free family holiday event aimed at supporting the organization's mission of delivering cheer to Western New Yorkers in long-term care and other non-traditional homes during the holiday season. The event will take place from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. on Saturday, December 6th at the Jefferson Youth Center at 250 Athens Boulevard. Families attending can enjoy a full lineup of activities, including an open gym with a live DJ, a scavenger hunt, crafts and games, photos with Santa, and the chance to explore police, SWAT, and fire vehicles. Guests can also visit the small animal rescues and enjoy free hot cocoa, coffee, donuts, and popcorn, courtesy of Rich Products and the Sheridan Parkside Life Center, which supplies last. A basket raffle will also be held. Families are requested to bring a donation to support Western New York Homes for the Holidays Incorporated. Suggested items include new blankets, tissues, sugar-free candy, hand soap, or shampoo. Donations will be entered into a drawing for a door prize. For more information, visit the department website, email kwzontek@tonawanda.new.york.us. or call 716-831-1001. You've been listening to Around Our Area, a weekly look at community newspapers from around Western New York. Stay tuned for our second hour. Your reader for this hour has been Patricia. Thank you for listening.
Coming up next in the Niagara Frontier Radio Reading Service, we have a reading of our South Towns papers, including Orchard Park, Hamburg, East Aurora, and West Seneca's B papers or Suns. At 3 o'clock, we have the Ample Eagle, and at 4 o'clock, we have the Grand Island Niagara County Tribune Sentinel. Stay tuned for these readings and more throughout the day, and contact us if you have comments, suggestions, or questions. You're listening to the Niagara Frontier Radio Reading Service. Volunteer radio readers broadcast daily readings, 24 hours a day, of newspapers, magazines, books, and other printed matter to area people who are blind or have a print disability, who are provided reading radios. The Niagara Frontier Radio Reading Service has broadcast almost 40 years of radio readings to those without sight. Our broadcast signal is provided at no charge by WNED. Radio Reading Studios are at 1199 Harlem Road in Cheektowaga. For more information on the Niagara Frontier Radio Reading Service, call 716-821-5555. The following program is intended for listeners who are blind, have low vision,